From the land of the Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of March 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Veig. She's a total farm marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Well, by the way, Jackie will be here next Tuesday for the Beef House event. You should be as well there, that is, at 217-333-7300 for your tickets, or willag.org. Details are all online right now. Drew Lerner will also join us this afternoon during the program. He'll help us take a look at the weather forecast. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn at $7.25 today, down 0.75 cents. July at $6.93 3/4, 14 lower. And December at $6.09 1/4, down 15.5. May soybeans 27 cents lower, settled at $16.63. July at $16.34, down 28 3/4. And new crop November soybeans at $14.52 1/2, 24.5 cents lower. Bean meal futures down $6.30 in the May. The bean oil May contract at $75.87, 34 cents lower. Wheat futures were up 75 in the May at $10.59 for the soft red. The July at 10.41 1/4, harvest month there, up 74 1/4. And the hard red, a March contract at $10.73 1/2, was up 61 1/2 cents today. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished at $140.10 in the April, down 42 1/2. The April feeders were $3.20 higher at $163. And lean hogs were 100 pounds at $106.30, were a dime higher on the afternoon. Crude oil futures at $110.46, $7.05 higher. Diesel fuel or heating oil up 3 1/10 at $3.46 3/10 cents. And the wholesale price of gasoline today at $3.27 3/10 cents. 18 4/10 cents lower on the afternoon. Gold futures at $1,927, down $16.90. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands for the afternoon at 33,919, up 649 points. Jackie Veig of Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, now joins us to take a look at today's trade and what's been happening in the marketplace. It's been something else, Jackie. I really look forward to having you here so that we can talk in depth about this next week at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Folks, by the way, can join us. $25 for that event. Jackie will be here along with another 9 of our analysts up on stage to discuss where the market is going to go. The Farm Doc team will take up their price outlook. That's Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin. That'll happen at the end of the day to kind of recap things. And of course, we'll talk about farm policy. We'll do some carbon market sorts of things, introduce something called STAR. And Eric Snodgrass will kick us off in the morning for the weather. Folks can get their tickets right now. I'm going to shut this off pretty soon. So if you've not got a ticket, you'll need to pick it up at 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300 or at willag.org, and all the details are there as well. Jackie, I'm so looking forward to having you here for that discussion.
I'm looking forward to it too, Todd. I tell you, these markets, you know, this is like the worst amusement ride I've ever been on. You know, it's like, I mean, holy cow, you talk about volatility. Volatility, I believe, is here to stay for quite a long time as we move forward. And so it's just, I mean, how do you explain, you know, it's very difficult from a farm perspective and from a marketing perspective, you know, to be able to look at the things that are going on. But, you know, we've talked before about the perfect storm that we've got with inflation, with the index funds, you know, with managed money, with the Ukraine situation. There's just so much happening. And we'll get into that when I talk about the markets in a little bit.
Well, let's start with the volatility. Did support and resistance change this week?
Not really in corn. From May, we've got 636 to 775. July, 642, 720. And December, 499, 632. So December probably has the wider range, of course. Beans, May, 1472, 1677. July, 1467 and 1667, excuse me. And November, 1375 and 1480. We look at April gold, 1892 to 2112. The Dow Jones, 32811 to 36953. The dollar index moved higher, 9735 support, 9950 resistance. And I changed over to March Bitcoin, 34300. Support 45965 resistance. Now, Todd, I tell you what, there's been a lot of speculation about managed money moving around and causing some of what we've been seeing going on. And this is very interesting. Managed money this week is now long 34,000 wheat compared to short 25,000 last week. On corn, they're 428,000 long compared to 324,000 last week. And the record is actually 429,189 that was put in September of 2010. Beans, long 195 compared to 184 last week. Soy meal, 92 compared to 91. And soy oil, 102 compared to 77. So you can see that the index funds have certainly been making some big moves here in the marketplace. Now, our index traders, or managed money, I should say, index traders, which hedge inflation, also made big moves. And, you know, it isn't long ago that they expanded the amount of positions that these guys can have. So it's not surprising that some of the records are being broken. But index traders on corn, 530,337 as of the 22nd. The last record was as of the 1st of this month at, or 1st of February, excuse me, at 503,937. We look at beans, 245 compared to 210. So it broke that record. Wheat, 182 compared to 229. So that record is not broken yet. But you can just tell that they are extremely active in the market. And so this combination of inflation, as well as everything else that's going on in the world, is giving us the wild rides that we're taking. Export inspections, wheat exports running 15% behind compared to 16 last week. We need 13.2 million bushels per week. Corn, 11% compared to 11 last week, 48.6 million. And soybeans, 22 compared to 22 last week, and we need 19.3 million, and those are to reach the USDA expectations.
Can you break down what's happening in the market for me?
Well, I'll do my best, okay? I think when you look at today's market, some of that is related to the fact that there's talk out there that Ukraine and Russia want to do some talking. So that could possibly be why we're seeing sell-off. And then, of course, when you see sell-off, you see margin reduction. And that's one of the things that we, you know, with the high volatility that we've seen, we have seen margin requirements changing quite often, you know, and so that can push people out of the market too. Now, I think it's interesting when you look at the Russia-Ukraine situation, you know, Russia supplies a lot of the low-cost crop nutrients for the U.S. They said no, this is from Bloomberg, they said no other nation has the same breadth of readily exportable fertilizer supplies. Their fertilizers move across all continents, and prices for the widely used nitrogen fertilizer urea in New Orleans surged 29% from the previous week, a record for the 45-year green market index, which is what Bloomberg has, after Russia invaded Ukraine. And so, you know, I think that there's many, many things working in the background here globally that maybe we here in the U.S. aren't thinking about, you know, as far as you and I have talked already, food prices, what might happen to food prices all over the world. I think that when you look at the drop in the South American production that we just heard about yesterday, and we should see that should support a higher market. So I don't think today is the end of the market in any way possible. Now, I looked at, if you look at the potential drops in corn production in South America, possibly the lack of shipping from Ukraine if this conflict continues to go on, because, you know, they have 500 million bushels of corn to still ship out. And now Brussels has been asked by the feed users if they can use GMO corn. You know, this could increase the U.S. exports. So if all three of these would happen, it's possible that the U.S. carryout on corn could drop all the way down to 650 million bushels. That's a pretty scary situation. And then you look at the bean-corn ratio. You know, it's so strange. We're back to 2.37. In mid-February, we were up to 2.46. You know, as a rule of thumb, we usually use 2.5, okay? You know, everybody's got to look at it from an individual standpoint as to what their input costs are. But I think there's a pretty good acreage battle that's looming out there. You know, if the potential is there for a big drop in the carryout, as well as, you know, corn right now is, it, well, one of two things has to happen. Either beans have to go lower and corn stays where it is, or corn has to go higher. One of the two. And when you look at the overall USDA global production and consumption of veg oils, that's pretty interesting. The USDA is saying 215 million metric tons. 20% of that is for biofuels. That's huge. You know, so this is the first time that we've actually seen KC wheat in May over $10 since 2008. Todd, you know, that's just plain crazy. And that's because of the war. You know, that's because of questions about how much wheat is going to be, Black Sea wheat is going to be available, all of these types of things. And so everything is just kind of crazy. When you looked at wheat today, it's pretty nuts in general. I mean, Chicago wheat especially was up limit. And, you know, it's just kind of a wild, wild thing. Now, China has come in and they actually have ordered their buyers to just scour the markets in China. They're looking for the materials like oil, gas, corn, barley, iron ore. Because of this conflict in the Ukraine, you know, they may import if their supplies aren't adequate, because they need to make sure that they keep their supplies adequate to protect the Chinese economy. And I think it goes beyond that, to be honest, Todd. I think it goes to protect the communist government, because you don't want people hungry. All of a sudden, they realize they're much bigger than the government is. And so the thing that I thought was ironic that I read today, I just can't believe that China reached out to Ukraine because they were concerned about civilians being killed by bombs. Now, come on. You know, we remember Tiananmen Square and all of those types of things. So that says to me that they are very, very worried about food and about supplies. And so all of that, you know, will drip down to us eventually if they don't have enough. And I doubt very much if they do.
Given that, we'd probably better take up the supply side from South America.
South America, production just keeps on going lower in Brazil and Argentina. Not a big surprise, although Argentina has gotten some rain, which should help the later product, you know, the later planted crops. But I don't think it's going to be enough to really pull. It's not going to stop things from going lower, I don't believe. And Argentina now, last week when we talked, they're having these wildfires. And they're now really impacting the national cattle herd. There's like 35 million head of cattle in this area where these fires are going on. And it's consumed about 2 million acres. It's really a tough, tough situation. And it isn't just cattle ranching that's being affected. It's also impacting their grain, rice, citrus production, forest plantations. And now the fire has actually gone into the Iber National Park, which, if you've ever read up about Brazil, is an amazing place. And it's one of the world's largest freshwater wetlands. And it has a lot of endangered species. So I actually saw pictures of cattle in Argentina walking through land that's still smoking. And it's just burned to the ground. There's nothing there. It's just amazing. So I don't know what they're going to be eating. Let's put it that way. So there's a lot of things going on. You know, when you look at Argentina, and even in Brazil, most of their livestock is grown in areas that does not raise grain. You know, they have to import whatever they get. And so I think that kind of explains why in Brazil, you know, the corn is at 8.25 a bushel. Domestic demand is saying you can't export corn. We need the corn here. And so, this is turning out to be quite a wild year.
May you live in interesting times.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness. Yes. And that's why I think, you know, the Beef House should be a great place for people to come. They can ask a lot of questions and gain a lot of good perspective. I think that's probably, to me, that's the thing that I always come away with from the Beef House, is that you have guys that ask questions, or they don't ask the question, but it gets answered. Because either someone else answers it or someone on a panel brings it up, and it makes a person think. And I think it helps you think outside the box, outside of the Illinois, Indiana area, worldwide is what we're thinking. So I really encourage people to come.
Hey, thank you. I look forward to having you there as well. And thanks for being with us today, Jackie.
Yep. Thanks, Todd.
Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing. She's in Hollister, Missouri, and will join us at the Beef House on Tuesday next week in Covington, Indiana. That's exit 4, just on the other side of Danville at Interstate 74, so it's easy to get to from almost anywhere. You can join us as well. The cost is just $25. We'll close registration down now pretty quickly, so you'll need to take some time today at 217-333-7300 to call in and get your tickets, or go online at willag.org to see all the details. It's a day-long event at the Beef House. It's a great function, and we sure hope that you can join us Tuesday next week. Let's check the weather forecast now on this Wednesday with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, let's start in the United States because the weather here is just fantastic. I know we said this earlier in the winter months, late last year, and we thought we might pay for it in February, and I guess we did. We're going to pay for this one, too, sometime in March?
Well, you know, it is what it is. You know, a lot of times in March, we get a lot of extremes. That is the month that we transition, you know, from winter to spring, and we get a lot of strong air masses, both cold and warm, and they do run into each other frequently, both March and April. And yes, I think we will be seeing some interesting dramatics later in the month and on into April. The warm-up is so nice, though. I mean, we waited a long time, and there's some folks in the northern plains that are still behind the eight ball, but it feels great, and hopefully it'll stick around for at least a little while. We do have more cold air coming up next week. It's nothing too dramatic, and really it's probably going to be a real good thing for hard red winter wheat, because we just don't want that crop to wake up completely, not in early March, because there's still a lot of potential for cold down the road. So that's probably one of the more important things that needs to be accomplished. So, and we will get that cool air coming back down. We'll get nighttime freezes again. But for these next few days, we're certainly going to reduce, if not remove, winter hardiness and leave that crop in another vulnerable position to take another hit if things go just exactly wrong.
Can you talk a bit more about what really conditions are like in the western part of the United States and into the Canadian prairies, starting in the south where it has been dry in those hard red winter wheat growing regions throughout the winter months, I think starting last fall as well. And then the Canadian prairies were just devastated last season with dry conditions, and maybe you can update us there too.
Yeah. The dryness in the U.S. hard red winter wheat country is still very impressive. You step back and take a look at the water year percent of normal that starts on October 1st, and the moisture that's occurred since then has been way below average. You know, some of the crops out there in the southern plains were somewhat okay established last fall, so it's not a huge disaster, but we have not done well with precipitation recently. And there is some frequent heaving going on with these temperatures bouncing around from way below normal to way above normal. And that's going to continue. So the crop, I think that there's been a considerable amount of at least temporary damage done to the crop. And I'm talking about roots that have been split and broken and perhaps some frost and freeze damage to some of the leaf mass. And, you know, the crop is going to come into those first weeks of the growing season kind of limping along. And what they really need is some good, solid, cool, and moist weather for a period of a few weeks. And that would give the crop time to set new tillers and repair those roots and really get going again. So it's not all lost. But the big concern is that we may not get that cool and wet bias. We do have an opportunity for a little bit of moisture coming up here in this month, but it's not going to be normal. But there might be enough moisture that might help to stimulate at least a little bit of a green up when it gets warm again, and maybe some early season crop repair. But I'm a little concerned when we get into April, we may turn it around the other way and get a lot more heat and less rain. And I think the crop might go back into a more seriously stressed mode. But as of this moment in time, there's still potential for the crop to come around. That's probably the most important thing to keep in mind. We're still early enough that we can make a big change. Now, farther north in Montana and the western Dakotas and on up into Canada's prairies, you're absolutely right. Those areas are still in a bad drought. Winter precipitation was minimal. There wasn't even snow on the ground through a big part of the winter in parts of that region, and some of the wheat didn't get planted in some of that region last fall because it was too dry. And then they got a little moisture, and they got real terribly cold. So it's real questionable as to what we got in the ground that's alive and will be able to recover. But most importantly, there's a big change coming for those areas, but it comes in the summer rather than the spring. We will see a southwest flow pattern evolving in May and will be most significant in June and July and to August. So the Canadian prairies will do a lot better in 2022 than they did last year. So will the spring wheat areas of the Northern Plains and maybe even the Pacific Northwest to some degree. So that's something that we're looking forward to. Now, one of the things that is going to help that happen is going to be a ridge of high pressure in the middle of the U.S. And that's not going to go over real well for the areas that are already dry in the hard red winter wheat areas and the western corn belt. So while the U.S. may have a tough time of it when we get deeper into the spring and summer, Canada will do a whole lot better. So those folks might be able to make a few bucks.
Yeah, it covers North America. What do you see in South America?
Yeah, we've finally come over the peak of the problem in Argentina and Brazil. We're getting some good solid rains right now in many areas, and what areas haven't had it yet will get it in this coming week. And we're also, moving into autumn now down that way. And so it's not going to be as hot as it has been. And I think the jet stream will be more active. So as we move forward through March, we're going to see more routinely occurring precipitation events in central and southern Argentina and far southern Brazil, including Rio Grande do Sul, maybe the southernmost parts of Paraguay, and on up into southern Paraná. Those areas will see a regular occurrence of precipitation. We'll have some breaks once in a while, but it'll never get warm enough to lose the moisture and create new stress for late season crops. Farther to the north, though, there might still be a little bit of an issue for some places. Northern Argentina, it's mostly cotton country up there. They may still have some issues with a little bit of warm and dry bias conditions in March and maybe even into early April. And the same will be true for northern Paraguay, which they really don't produce a lot of crop there, and also in Bolivia and maybe a few areas in the northwest part of Mato Grosso do Sul. But the rest of Brazil, including the heart of their Safrinha corn country, I think we'll see a regular occurrence of rain, and the worry over dryness will diminish as time moves forward. We'll have our moments where it'll be a little drier biased, but it's not going to be anything like what we've been seeing. And I really think the bottom line is going to be favorable for that Safrinha crop.
Hey, thank you. We'll talk with you again next week.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.